Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are to discuss the fact that the debt ceiling thing has been moved ahead. This is July 26, by the way, 2011, for those keeping score. So what's going on in the market? Did you hear? You heard about today's announcement, right? That obviously, or now apparently, the debt ceiling that was dropped dead on August 2nd has been moved to August 10th.
Yeah, we moved the ceiling as it's almost like, you know, they're calling the bill collectors, and the bill collectors are giving them that extra time.
Yeah, they found some money, according to Geithner. They found some money. Is this the kind of books we do in this country?
They found money again. There was some kind of a slush fund that Geithner had of some sort, and the debt ceiling actually ran out, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, let's say.
Yeah.
And he found some money that can keep things going for a little bit longer. I mean, I guess he checked under the nation's mattress.
This guy is a pathological liar.
Yeah.
I'm convinced of it.
Why not borrow it from the Fed? Fed seems to have unlimited amounts of money.
Seems so.
And they just, you know, say, hey, we need money to pay for this and that and let it go. You know, when we talked earlier, you said you didn't watch all of the presidential.
No, I missed it. No. I was going to catch it.
You know, the speech was, well, first of all, his suit was gorgeous. It was just so well pressed. I'm not kidding. I was just fixated on his suit the whole time. It was just not a, it was so wonderfully pressed.
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah, well, the guy has, you know, top Italian silks.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Anyway, President Obama came on and talked about the seriousness of the situation and how it was something that needed to be done, and compromise was important, and quoted some past presidents and when this thing happened, what happened, and all of this. And then it was followed up by Boehner had a whole different demeanor going on. While President Obama was very stern, very serious, but yet at the same time very much, I thought, trying to rally the people, it was Boehner who was very direct and almost to a point of, I felt like I was being lectured to by a principal after I did something very wrong.
Huh.
And it was interesting that right after his speech, right after Boehner's speech, the dollar dropped about 0.5% immediately.
Wow.
And the world wasn't as happy as it was just before that. Now, it wasn't happy with the Obama discussion either, and I think the combination of the two, where they're so far apart, and the idea of compromise doesn't really want to play into it, and I think both of them are either calling each other's bluff and saying they're going to wait till the last second. I don't know. I mean, I hope it doesn't get to that.
Well, it reminds me of Obama, like recently, within the last month or so, he said, they better not call my bluff. He said that, right?
Yeah.
Well,
if it's
a bluff, well, why would you tell someone it was a bluff? It's a bluff.
Right. Exactly.
You can't say,
can you imagine playing
like
cards
that
with somebody and say, hey, don't call my bluff.
Don't call my bluff.
But the situation is getting concerning because the ratings agencies are putting a lot of pressure on them. And if, in fact, the ratings agencies, one or all of them, cut down the rating of the U.S., what happens is that the buyers of treasuries, the notes of the government, will have to pay more interest because they're higher risk. Higher interest means higher payments by the U.S. government on that debt, and that means further expense, which also means then it has to be paid from somewhere where the money isn't obviously available to begin with. Therefore, this game that they're playing, while it may be resolved either through a postponement, let's say a six-month period where they raise the debt ceiling and they have talks to come up with a deficit reduction plan and a budget plan, the fact is that the ratings agencies still may say, hey, you know what? You don't have a fiscal responsibility here, or you haven't provided fiscal responsibility, and you're still going to get a cut, which is pretty much going to unravel all the work that Bernanke did over the last year trying to buy bonds to keep the rates down.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So nobody's happy. Nobody, I mean, you know,
the market hasn't collapsed.
No, the market hasn't collapsed at all.
A couple of points here and there.
Well, I think because there's still time left. And I think people, I don't think anybody really believes at the end of the day that they're going to allow the time to lapse without a plan. I think somebody's going to have to give. The problem is that Boehner is starting to lose a big amount of their of his support, because what's happening is that the Tea Party movement is really putting a lot of pressure on him, and they do not want him to budge at all. No taxes at all. Now, I don't know what you think, but tell me something. If this situation is as serious as it is, or as it appears to be, with the amount of debt that we have, the amount of spending issues that we have, the cost factors, are you in favor of spending cuts, higher taxes, or a combination?
Spending cuts.
Not higher taxes.
I don't think there's any reason for higher tax. We already have one of the highest rates actually, we have the highest corporate rate in the world. And I think our general rates, combined with all the fees and other hidden taxes, we're one of the most taxed peoples there are. I mean, I don't see any reason to add to the tax burden. Why, are you a big, let's have more taxes?
Well, personally, I'm not in favor of taxes. No, of course not. But I'm trying to understand how it is that we're going to reduce this $14 trillion, which somebody asked me today, what's $1 trillion? And I said, well, it's $1,000 billion. $1,000 billion. Right?
Yeah.
So we have $14 trillion. And let's say, just for the heck of it, all we want to do is slice out $5 trillion of that to bring it down to $9 trillion, which is still a ridiculous number. How are we going to go about doing that?
We can't get jobs, and we don't have any. You know, everyone's outsourcing everything, and it's been encouraged with the tax breaks for the people who send jobs overseas, which is a known fact. There's a lot of different things to do. And how about the Defense Department budget? Things out of control.
I mean, I agree.
There's money just being wasted left and right. I think we should stop the waste before we start increasing taxes. I mean, at least show a little, instead of just continually to spend like crazy and let stuff and waste like crazy and to expense everything and to have Nancy Pelosi flying back and forth on U.S. government jets and all the rest of it. Let's cut this stuff back before we start. I mean, I don't mind taxing people at some point if we absolutely have to, but not when you're throwing money away.
No, I agree. I mean, the waste is ridiculous, and obviously it has to stop. But, you know, right now we're burning through about $100 billion a month, as I figure it. When we last increased the debt ceiling, which I think was February a year ago, and that was $1.9 trillion of an increase. So if you count how many months that is till now, that's about 18 months or so. It's about $100 billion a month that we increased. So $100 billion a month, I mean, that's not chicken change. I mean, that's a lot of money. And still we don't have jobs. And still we don't have a very even recovery. The banks are still having difficulty. The housing situation is, you know, we saw the Case-Shiller number today. The first thing you see that, oh, everybody's happy. There's a 1% rise from last month to this month. But that's not the number we look at. The same thing the media tried to do last month. We had a 5% year-over-year decline in housing prices. That's the number everybody looks at. That's the standard number to be looking at, which is the year-over-year value of a home. Smooth it all out to see what the values are, and it's down 5% in the 20-city survey. So, you know, we have this continuing problem, and I don't know if you saw Bank of America last week, I believe it was, came out with an earnings number. They had a $30 billion loss they booked, the largest loss they've ever had. That's inclusive of the years 2008.
Is the biggest. It's a miserable company.
I'm not disagreeing.
I mean, it used to be a great little bank in the West Coast, and then they expanded, and then they got bought by that group in North Carolina, is it? I'm not sure.
And NCNB.
NCNB, and they, you know, essentially turned it into a kind of a, hopefully they thought it was a cash cow, and the joke was on them. And then now, and they're terrible customer service. They're mean to their – they don't even – in fact, there's all kinds of, you know, discussions about how they don't even do customer service at all, and if you don't qualify as a person, they can gouge. It's just the company shouldn't even be in business.
Yeah, they turn into a telephone company.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. It's the model.
Right.
AT&T is the model for these guys. I mean, I have no sympathy for them.
Well, the other thing that's happening now is that we were supposed to have a vote tomorrow on the debt ceiling. But now that seemingly the plan that was being presented is not going to have as much cuts as was advertised, you know, whatever that means. They're going to push it off till Thursday, trying to get further support for this thing.
Well, I wish they'd get it over. You know, this is killing me because it's all theater. It's a bunch of people, you know, showboating and posturing and doing all these things to make it themselves look good to whoever, their constituents or the Tea Party or I don't know. And it's getting tiresome. I think it's boring.
Well,
I wish
meanwhile,
just get it over with.
The more this goes on, even those constituents that supported whatever the agenda was are getting sick and tired of all this. Polls are showing that across the board, people are so disgusted, and ratings for Congress and for the president are some of the lowest they've ever been.
You know, I still believe a lot of this stems from the fact that in 2006, Obama himself came out with a big proclamation that we shouldn't have raised the debt ceiling ever, and the fact that we need to is a lack of leadership in the executive office. And he went on and on about it. I mean, he made a big stink. It was a very people love quoting it, by the way. It's here and there, but it's like I think this is a make good. It's like you really think that way, huh? Well, here now you deal with it. I think they're really trying to make him age. He's sweating it out. Let's face it.
Is this the old "read my lips, no new taxes" concept, and the turnaround from there?
That's something like that. I mean, it's just definitely, it's definitely an anti-Obama thing, because you know this is what happens in politics. If you screw, you know, over the one, you know, you do something that can be thrown back in your face, that they'll do it.
Yeah, they have a long memory. They have like an Excel spreadsheet that they can reference of what happened and what the score is, right?
Kind of like ours.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at what we got.
Yep.
Okay.
We covered number one already.
Yeah, to an extreme, I think we probably overcovered it. What is this thing you got? You have on the list here, Representative David Wu.
Yeah, he. It seems that he's been accused of unwarranted sexual encounter with a teenage daughter of a longtime friend. There was something going on with some fundraising, or something was going on, and I guess he. This is a guy that's been in trouble before. He's had all sorts of problems. He's getting, I guess, a divorce now. And another one like Wiener and the list that is going to special counseling for whatever his problem is. But he obviously, you know, made some sexual advances on not only a teenager, but on a teenager of a daughter of a very good friend of his. That's low. That's low,
it's
right?
It's funny, though. Yeah, it's very low, but it's highly amusing.
I don't understand how, you know, when you're in the public and you're in the public eye.
Yeah, it's not like a sleazeball next door neighbor.
Yeah, it would seem that you would be ultra careful in image, you know,
the whole idea of your image. Yeah.
And being discreet. How about that?
Yeah.
But no,
you've got other things to do with your time, too, than chase women.
Yeah. I mean, if it's one thing, if this exact same circumstance was pinned on Charlie Sheen or. You know, a politician, besides the fact they have this horrible reputation anyway, and this guy has been in all sorts of trouble before, and now, you know, he's going to have to resign. Of course, guess who's stepping up to say there will be a full investigation?
Clinton.
Well, I'll give you a better clue. A congressperson.
Oh, well,
it
could be any one of them.
Yeah, Pelosi.
Oh, Pelosi. What an idiot. All right. Let's get back to stocks.
All right.
Yeah, Apple.
Apple, Apple. Boy, oh boy. Apple is on fire.
That's ridiculous. It's almost laughable at this point.
I mean, they just stole business and cratered every other company around them, didn't they?
Yeah.
Besides Google.
Out of
Google.
The blue, basically.
Well, I mean sales were great. Sales were great. The biggest sales came from China. 57% of the new iPhone sales were like in China.
And they're opening a couple of stores. Of course, they have some clone stores in China that had to be shut down, which is typical. But I wrote about that. But the
I actually saw those in China.
The fake ones?
I was.
Did you take any photos?
I didn't. We passed by. I said, look at that. That looks like an Apple store. But you know what? That's not an Apple store. There's no way that's an Apple store. And I saw the Apple logo and the whole thing.
So they had the big logo and everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They had
it. See, I was wanting to see one. No one's taking any really good pictures of when you're showing the logo and all the rest of it. Well, that's the thing. I wrote this in MarketWatch last Friday, which I suggested that this is potentially a bigger problem for Apple than anybody wants to admit, which is that If this thing takes, it's taking off in China, the Apple products, but the products are made in China. And the fact of the matter is that there's clones of those things already all over the place. And they're going to lose about, I would guess, at least half of their business in China to the clones, which will run the Apple software. And they'll have some other things like dual SIM, which is the giveaway of a fake iPhone. Because the Chinese, for some reason, love dual SIMs. And I don't think it's necessarily a good thing that Apple's doing so well in China, but because I think they're just going to get ripped off left and right. But I have to say, Apple is just killing everybody.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
The numbers, I don't know if we went over this all, but their numbers were just phenomenal. And their outlook was, you know, they put down, you know, as usual, that their outlook is a little bit more reserved. But their numbers were just killer. And there was a couple of areas, I don't want to say soft spots, but, you know, but the iPhone and the iPad and their Macs, just wow, just amazing, just amazing. Now, Google came out with earnings, and I guess in a way you could have suspected that the Android operating system was, which is powering an amazing amount of phones, somewhere in the neighborhood of 500,000 activations a day. Samsung is just selling phones like there's no tomorrow. And as a matter of fact, I think Samsung is now selling more phones than Nokia because of the Android system. And Google, with all their advertising, the things they're doing, it made a tremendous amount of money. And their stock went from, I don't know, 470 to 600 in a matter of 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a winner.
Yep. And Baidu came out with earnings last night, blew the doors off the numbers. Amazon came out with numbers tonight. Now, Amazon was interesting because Amazon, and I listened to part of the conference call tonight, but Amazon came out with numbers and their EPS was on and actually looked good. Their revenues were a little bit short and their margin was really compressed. And when I first saw the headline numbers and all the numbers, I said, you know, there's definitely an issue here. Why is their margin so compressed and why is there not the revenues that should be? Last time around when Amazon came out with numbers, their EPS was light, and they blamed it on their expansionary expenses. Well, now we have the opposite. We have good EPS, but we have revenues that are down. I don't like to see revenues down compared to what the expectations were, because then we're saying that sales weren't there. It has nothing to do with expenses at this point, right?
Yeah, so I'm very concerned about that, and for a number of different reasons. For one thing, I buy a lot of stuff from Amazon. And I figure that, you know, Amazon picks up a lot of business because other companies, you know, Borders is going out of business. Amazon picks up a lot of that business. There's all kinds of little products you want to get, but there's no computer stores anymore. So Amazon picks up a lot of that. Amazon picks up a lot of ancillary business that is not even books or what it used to be traditionally, but all kinds of things. And that tells me more about the economy, which is kind of frightening, than it tells me about Amazon, because I don't see anything Amazon's doing wrong personally.
So what are you saying? You're saying that the economy is lighter? That I mean, and because also Amazon,
that's what I'm saying.
They also credited some of the revenue coming in from international areas, and they also credited
That makes it worse.
Exactly. And they credited that their Kindle and Kindle-related apps and bookstores and selling of electronic style of, we'll call it, entertainment of sorts, whether it's movies or it's Kindle-related books or things of that nature, and ads from Kindle are really driving things. So, yeah, that's back to the same question: is why is their revenues down, and then their margins sequentially the last few quarters have been down, down, and down. Meanwhile, stock trades off about, I don't know, 4% after hours for about a minute, 2 minutes. And then they started buying the crap out of it, and I was kind of interested in why that was. I was pretty surprised that from all the numbers and what I heard on the conference call that the stock was actually up 6% after hours.
Well, I heard they were that. My understanding of the reason the stock went up was the fact that it was determined that Amazon's numbers weren't going to be they were going to be off, but not. But they were going to be more off than they were. It's one of those things where, well, we did crummy, but we didn't do as crummy as everyone thought, so everyone buys the stock, which is ludicrous, but it works. That's my understanding.
Yeah, we call it the whisper numbers.
Yeah, the whisper numbers. But I still think this is I think Amazon at this point, it's something to consider. It's a leading indicator. of the economy as a whole, I believe. And I think that these numbers are not good.
Well, no question that the economy is softening. No question that we saw consumer confidence over the last several months decline, manufacturing decline, overall activity, you know, generally speaking, decline. And there's a lot of worry. I mean, you have two major issues. We'll say three. Three major issues. You have oil prices and energy prices up dramatically and staying there close to the $99 to $100 range of oil. And gas prices, of course, are in the high threes, low fours. The second thing you have is the European crisis that spooked everybody. And then you have the American situation. I mean, every time you turn around, there's something else this year, whether it's the situation in the Middle East, whether it's the Japanese, craziness, whether it's in Norway. We have crazy people in Norway, killing people. This kind of market moving events that continually seem to be popping up. It's very strange. I wonder what the next one's going to be. And you think,
it never ends. It's one of the things, why we can keep doing podcasts and right. The rest of it, because nothing ever settles down. And it actually seems to be getting weirder and crazier. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, for the most part, now I think that some of the companies that had a lot to do with, we'll say, construction, building, materials are not doing well. AK Steel, a steel manufacturer that did a lot in the auto business, came out with the earnings. Stock was off by 17% today. You look at companies like any of the manufacturing company, Caterpillar, their earnings were off below expectations. So you look at those material companies, et cetera, they're not doing as well. But the big boys and the major players with the heavy growth, even Tempur-Pedic blew out numbers tonight because those mattresses are obviously in high demand.
Yeah, I guess.
And let's not forget that Amazon bought a shoe company last year.
Right. And here we go.
Yeah.
We're going to start talking shoes.
Yep. Yep. I was in the airport again this weekend. They bought a variety of companies to increase their revenue. And again, I'd like to see what's going to happen with the stock tomorrow. I'm kind of interested. It's one thing after hours, but we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, it concerns me that unless some of these things like the shoe company, which I've never been a subscriber to the idea that selling shoes over the internet is a great idea. But, my son, for example, has a pair of weird-looking shoes that I asked him where he got them. He bought them over the internet. So I think people are buying shoes over the internet.
Well, let me, you've never bought shoes over the internet?
No.
All right, let me
there's,
just
there's things that I don't know, maybe people haven't noticed this, but there are shoe stores and you can buy shoes at all kinds of places, department stores.
Right, let me just share something with you. I want you to try something for me. It won't cost you anything. I want you to go to something like a shoebuy.com. You know what size of shoe you are, generally speaking. You know what shoes you like.
Yeah.
Order a few pairs. Just order a few pairs.
Yeah.
You pay for them. They give you free shipping.
Yeah.
They arrive a few days later. You try them on. You don't like them. You put in a return order. They pick them up. Don't charge you for the return postage. You don't pay anything for the whole transaction.
Yeah.
And you're done.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
How do they make money with this concept?
I didn't say they were making money. I just said it's a cool thing for us to do. I mean, they're obviously getting it at cut rate prices, and they got a great deal with the carriers, the UPS or FedEx.
Yeah, I'll give it a run. Because I'm sure there's some cool-looking shoes that that's good. I can buy these shoes instead of the, Skechers and Crocs that I wear.
Yep, exactly. So there's an IPO coming out tomorrow, Dunkin' Donuts.
I thought they were public.
They were, but then they were taken private.
Oh, privatized, okay.
Right. So they're coming out tomorrow. There's, as usual, the IPOs these days oversubscribed.
Oh.
And they raised the price of the offering.
Oh.
So somewhere about $20.
Stunner.
What a stunner.
For Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, the bigger problem is I had a couple of people out of the blue call my office, which never happens, about looking to buy the IPO.
Oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
That's another bad indicator.
Yep. So Dunkin' Donuts is coming out. I mean, they're profitable off and on. They're the number one coffee and breakfast company, and they have a Baskin Robbins they own and a variety of things. But we'll see what happens. They're raising about $385 or $400 million. Not a big raise with this deal. And I would expect that the stock is probably going to pop. and initially, and then kind of like maybe just scale back a little bit and then maybe move up from there. But there's interest in it because it's a known name and it's the old, you know, I like their coffee, I'll buy their stock.
Yeah. I don't know who likes their coffee, but okay.
Yeah, the coffee's okay. I like McDonald's coffee.
Oh, really?
And Weasel coffee.
What about Green Mountain? Do you like that?
Green Mountain coffee? Yeah, it's okay. I mean, you know, they have all those different flavors and all those fun things, and it's okay. Hmm. I mean, I wouldn't buy a bag of Green Mountain coffee. I prefer to buy a Starbucks and make it myself, you know, so I don't make it as potent as they make it. Or,
potent?
You know, well, do you like Starbucks coffee? I find it to be very bitter.
I don't like it at all. It's crummy and it's weak.
Yeah, well, it depends on what you have. But it's bitter, isn't it? Isn't it kind of bitter and over-roasted?
I haven't noticed that so much. Maybe back there.
I don't like it. I don't like it. But speaking about shoes, we'll end this discussion on this. Crocs earnings is tomorrow.
And you're poised.
We're poised to
make a killing here on our little thing here. You're up 20% on Crocs. I just looked at the spreadsheet.
And it was down a little bit today. But we'll see tomorrow if actually the new and brand new and exciting Chameleon shoe, which is a hit among kids, which turns from purple to white depending on the sun and nighttime, really hits a chord.
You know, I think it will.
Yeah.
I think you nailed this one.
We'll see. We'll see what happens with it. But, you know, you have costs involved. You have rubber costs and material costs and all that goes on.
But shoes probably cost $2 to make.
All I'm going to tell you is go on the Crocs site and look at the different things they have these days. You would not believe the variety of selection and the depth of style they have. It's amazing. I really do. I think it's amazing. Hmm. Compared to what Crocs used to be, which was those shoes that nurses and doctors used to wear, right?
Yeah, those clunkers.
It's a whole different thing right now. Okay, so there was a train crash in China.
Yeah.
Now, as I was in China 2 weeks ago, I was looking at the new, brand new, ready to go, Shanghai to Beijing bullet train.
Yeah.
And I come back and I have actually a podcast with a gentleman named Vitaly Katnitsyn, who has very much been on the, you know, on the bandwagon of China is a disaster area about to happen from a lot of different angles, talking about the real estate markets, talking about the ghost towns, etc. One of the things that he brought up on the podcast before this train crash, about 2 days before, he said, and let me tell you something, there is really horrible manufacturing, workmanship, and use of materials that are subpar in China, and it's going to cause a big problem. He said this, just look at all the problems that they're having with the trains and the new bullet trains there that are already falling apart so soon after they're being built and you know, initially run. And then a day or two later, this happens.
Hmm.
So I don't know if they're going to get to the bottom of what the reason is, but Vitaly believes it was this, you know, this terrible workmanship that's just the epitome of what's happening in China, that they're putting people to work just to work to stimulate the economy.
Well, I think the workmanship is just generally crummy with a lot of this stuff. I mean, they can make super high quality products. I mean, most of the cameras, a lot of the things we buy from China, they're very, you know, high end, high quality. But like the new San Francisco Bay Bridge span here in the Bay Area, they got this huge piece of – they shipped it over from China, this monstrous piece of bridge, which is being welded in China. And the entire piece, which must have cost, millions and millions of dollars, was completely rejected and shipped back because it was subpar.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Oh, yeah. This has been going on with this Chinese. I don't know why they contracted it to China. It's just typical.
Seems a little weird, by the way.
It's totally weird, and it's actually a scandal as far as I'm concerned. But that's beside the point. They send the stuff over here, and it's junk. I mean, they can't even – it's just simple welds, you know, in a piece of a bridge. The welds just are subpar. And I think there's a lot of crap being made in China, I mean, which is unfortunately getting into – it's almost like a it's like the those genetic issues happening with corn and some other things, the rice in Texas.
The watermelons.
Where you're getting these genetic – the genetically engineered products that are sneaking into the general population, and a lot of stuff like bolts and screws and the stuff that comes over from China that doesn't meet spec is being bolted onto airplanes, and it's supposed to hold and it won't. I mean, this is a real serious problem, and it's not really being addressed. I don't know why we're so reliant on China.
You know, now that you mention it, that's interesting, because you would think that there is a, we'll call it a building code and an inspection requirement when building things like a bridge, that during the process it has to be signed off on and it has to be approved, and you know, through the whole process there is a regulatory oversight of the building of the bridge due to, you know, certain basic requirements for safety. But they build that bridge over in China. Do we still have that same oversight, or is maybe that why there's such little such a large cost differential?
I think it has a lot to do with the cost differential. And I think there's been a problem with inspection. I mean, the whole thing is reliant on inspectors. And obviously we're not, because we can't afford it or whatever reason, we're not using American inspectors. Instead, we're using Chinese inspectors who are just, you know, cutting corners. I think it has a lot to do with the cost.
It doesn't make any sense to me that, I mean, would we build a building? I mean, it's one thing building a cruise ship maybe or something, but would you build a building, a permanent structure? So first of all, the fact that we allowed it with the job situation here in the United States is just amazing to me. And the second thing is, I agree with you that there's just some strangeness that we would build a bridge. I mean, we're not talking about a small structure. Yeah, the whole thing is.
Well, I mean, the other thing is this with the trains. I mean, I understand it was the laying of the track. I mean, there's a lot of variables in doing a high speed bullet train. They've got too many. For one thing, this reminds me of the outsourcing to India, which is that when people first came up with the idea of outsourcing, you know, call centers and things to India. There wasn't, you know, the first guys that did it got the cream of the crop of the Indians. They could speak good English. They were really good at call centers. And then, then everyone said, well, gee, these guys are saving so much money doing this. Let's do it. And it put a lot of pressure on the Indian infrastructure to create call centers with a bunch of incompetent boneheads. And then there became a backlash. The Chinese have decided to do all these high-speed rails all at once. And there's got to be stressing out the workforce. I mean, how many experts can actually put together a high-speed rail line and oversee it, its building? I don't think there's that many in the world, let alone in China.
Yeah, it's different than building a road, for example, which, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they can do fine with roads. But even when you're in China, you notice this. They got these big roads that go from here to there, and the road's like six lanes. There's no markers on the lanes. There's buses and trucks and guys walking, and there's people pulling carts, and there's donkeys, and there's bicycles, and there's all this other bull crap on the roads. People are passing each other every which way, honking the horn constantly because you're supposed to honk the horn when you pass. I mean, mm-hmm. It's like it's a joke.
Yeah, no, there's something very wrong with the whole thing, and hopefully they'll get to the bottom of why they contracted aside from just cost, which is, of course, important. But now the cost, well, I'm assuming that the cost of the repair and the redo is going to be on the company that did it. But still, it just seems to be a little bit extreme.
Well, you know, it's obviously so cheap that they can take a rejected piece and send. Here's an example. My wife is a big fan of these Wagner power steamers. It's a steaming device that lets you clean. You can get wallpaper off. You can do all kinds of things with. You can clean a bathroom. There's all these things with this Wagner steamer. They had them at Costco, and everybody's got one. My son's got one. Everyone's going to one of these. I got one here, and mine blew up. And apparently, they blow up all the time because the steam element doesn't work or something. It's made in China. So you can just get a hold of Wagner, say, and show them the receipt. Say, I need my thing blew up, and I'm expecting to get another one. So I got another one. Showed up in the mail. They didn't want the old one back.
Yeah, I've had that too. I've had products like that. I'm like, what do you mean you don't want the back? Aren't you going to at least look at it?
I told my wife, I said, next time just get buy one and use the receipt. Say it went bad. We'll have two of them. I mean, they make so much money off the Chinese product, obviously, that they don't even worry about checking to see if you're not scamming them. They don't care.
I had that with motherboards, actually. I had two different motherboards, and I just called them up. I said, hey, here's my motherboard and my serial number, and they just sent me another one.
Yeah.
I said, thank you.
And they're probably still making money.
Right. Hey, do you hear about George Soros? We talked about this, that he was 75% in cash now. He was really concerned about the global environment and the political uncertainty and all that. But you know what happened? Here's the follow-up to the story. He's now seemingly ending his career of managing outside money and returning the money to investors, which I guess was a big part of the reason why he was raising cash. Now, one of the reasons why he's doing that, or the reason he cites at least, is that the regulatory environment is now going to require him to register with the SEC, and he doesn't want to do that.
I don't blame him.
And he's going to have transparency issues and all that. Now, what further caught my eye was that he manages a total of $25 billion, but only $1 billion of that is client money. The rest is family, friends, personal. Now, I thought that was interesting because I was always the assumption he was a big player in the hedge fund area.
Apparently not.
He's only managing $1 billion.
Yeah, he's basically managing his own money.
Right, but $1 billion
outside
money.
That must be just, it's chicken feed, but it must also be just pals and people who insisted on it or whatever. I don't know.
It just seems like a small amount of money.
Yeah, it does.
For you know, the $1 billion of client money for all the times he's been out there, his global presence, and I mean, it really seems small. Although the money he has for himself and his family seems very nicely large, and what does he need the hassle for, I guess, on that 25-to-1 relationship?
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, who needs that? So anyway, let's see. We talked about Samsung kicking butt, right, that they're selling more of that. RIM is laying off 2,000 employees. Did we talk about that?
Yeah, no, but they're in trouble.
Yeah, they're kind of at this point, they sent out the alert, the flares are out. And they're trying to cut back, laying off these 2,000 people. The U.S. dollar is under pressure. It's closing at a year-to-date low on this debt confusion issue. Oil is closing in at $100. Today, it was a very strange day in the oil markets. Oil was down about 1.5%, you know, with the issue of the dollar and the pressure and the economy and all this. And then out of nowhere, it turned around, flipped up over 1%, clipped over $100 a barrel, and then finished down a little bit lower.
Yeah, I found that peculiar.
Yeah, it was very strange. And then we also know that last week, you see on a weekly basis, I believe it's ending Thursday. Well, you get the Tuesday data, you get it on Thursday, Friday. You get what's called the commitment of traders from the futures boards. And you find that right now the long bets on oil are more than they've been in a very, very long time.
Hmm.
Very long time. And the bets are playing out to the 120 mark. That's where the numbers are being seen right now to oil go to, which is kind of, you got to wonder about that. You know, if the economy is theoretically slowing a bit by all measures, and if there is this global concern, and how does oil get to 120 without, you know, just because the dollar maybe, or just, I don't know. It seems a bit far-fetched, but I guess possible.
Something's rigged.
Well, it's always rigged. I mean, the commodities market is one of the worst places. And then, you know, on top of that, you know, Obama's plan to – listen, they just released the strategic reserves a month ago, and it did nothing. As a matter of fact, oil is $7 higher than it was then.
Yeah, I guess that didn't work out.
No, it didn't seem to work. So, you know, and now in Europe, there's a few players, the governments that are saying, do not do that again. We will not support that move again. It's not being used for the right reasons. So, and again, that goes back to the fact that whoever was the advisor on that move and whoever was involved in that obviously didn't have the business experience to understand that the amount that they did push out in the market was not going to create anything more than a short-term blip. And supposedly the idea was to reduce the price of gas for July 4th weekend, but I mean, that seems like a bit of a stretch.
It's getting pretty obvious that they don't know what they're doing. The wind thing was one thing, but everyone now, I think they're starting to pile on. There's no business experience in the White House.
Yeah, you think they'd hire some commodity players in it. Somebody, I don't know, somebody.
Nobody will either listen to them or they, I don't know, I have no idea. It's just, it's getting to be sorry.
Yeah, I mean, they need to come together. And the other thing is the divide between the Republicans and the Democrats is getting not only wider, it's almost getting to a point that you don't think they can ever reconcile their differences. Well, that's a sad situation. We all knew that there was going to be a situation like this when the Republicans came in, but it's almost gridlock is one thing, but stagnation is another. You know, nothing's getting done. Nothing's getting done at all. So speaking about governments that have all sorts of problems, Japan. So the radiation problem seems to be continuing to expand. Now there's radiation in the hay that's feeding livestock.
Yeah, this radiation thing's a problem. I'm worried about fish when you buy good sushi that comes from Japan farms. I'm concerned about it.
I mean, it
luckily, I have a Geiger counter.
Ah,
you know that good. Apparently the guy who runs the fish restaurant in New York, the very famous one, for some reason the name eludes me. But they, the chef was on one of the talk shows recently, and they say they hit all the fish that comes in with a Geiger counter.
Wow, that's pretty scary.
Well, I mean, it makes people feel better about eating at the right. fish restaurant.
Right. Then they put it in the microwave to defrost it. Right.
That's no, they don't do that. Not at this place.
No, I understand. But they, first of all, I was in Japan on a stopover from that trip recently. And on the news and the information was to be careful what you were eating, even as far as Tokyo.
Yeah.
So we just didn't eat anything, and there was things to be eaten, but we didn't because of this news item that was on right there in Japan. It was on the news, and I just wonder what is the problem with Japan? It seems like they're so far behind the curve on this that they just don't want to get in front of it, or they just are trying so hard to
save
hide
face.
It. Yeah, is that what it is? It seems very...
It's got to be it. What else could it be?
I don't know. I don't know why they can't seemingly get ahead of it.
They're so prideful, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're prideful to the point that everybody's going to lose their hair.
Right.
And we're going to have a whole... the next generation is going to be disfigured.
Something like that.
Well, that's not going to be good.
But they'll have their pride.
Yeah, well. So anyway, that's still going on. And I think even though the discussion has been limited... This whole thing keeps on coming up more and more, and I just wonder how far this is going to spread because it doesn't. You know, we haven't heard much about the Fukushima plants recently. About are they still are they contained yet? Do we even know?
My understand. No, we don't know much. We do know this. All I heard, which in the last week or so, was that there's less radiation coming off of them, and there's less to be worried about, or something like along those lines. No, we don't know what the hell's going on, and it's like, I don't know what the Japanese are going to do.
Yeah, but their markets, even with all the problems, keep on moving up a little bit more and more, even though the yen is at about 78 right now, which is lower than it's been.
Unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. And, the whole discussion about how their companies cannot really be profitable, many of the exporters, under 85, and it's 78. I mean, we're talking a big distance here.
And that 10%. Means that to keep up, to be competitive in this country, they have to essentially sell stuff at cost or really low margins. I mean, you can't jack the price up of Toyotas that much and sell them.
Right. Well, that's why the Hyundai cars are doing so well.
Oh, Hyundai and Kia both are and not only that, but they're getting a lot of positive reviews. I don't know who's doing their public relations, but they're getting a lot of positive PR that makes it sound like, let me think about it. And I've looked at some of the new Hyundais. I think are gorgeous. They're very, very well designed, very attractive. They look like if you just catch a glimpse of them, they look like a really nice Mercedes.
Yeah, what the telltale situation is this: my son, who is about to get his driver's license in a couple of months, he has dreams of a car. He wanted a BMW 325i, a couple years old and all that. And I said, oh, that's nice. For your first car, that sounds very reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Right. And I have a rule with my kids, by the way. The kids are, I'm not buying you a car. That you will buy your own car. Now, I'll help you along with it, but you have to save money and you have to make the payments on it. Now, when you're working and you put money in your savings account, I'll match it. So I did that for years with my girls. And that worked fine. They worked over here, over there, babysitting, whatever. Now, my son, on the other hand, does DJing at 13 or so, 14, he started this. So he makes like $250, $300, $400 a party. He says, Dad, are you going to match my money that I put in the bank as well? So let me get this straight. You're making $250, $300 a party. You have an allowance with an unlimited amount, basically. and you pay for nothing, and I'm supposed to match that as well? He said, well, you did it for the girls. I said, well, we're going to have to talk about that.
I think he's got you cornered.
Yeah, well, no question about that. You know, I mean, I wasn't going to stop him from that and say, go for a minimum wage job, right?
No.
So he has enough money on his own. I really haven't done much matching, and we've talked about that, but he has enough money because the cost of insurance for a 16-year-old boy is not cheap.
No, it's got to be through the roof.
Right. So he says to me the other day, you know that BMW 3? Yes. He says, you know, I'm thinking I don't want it. I said, really? He says, have you seen the Hyundai Genesis Coupe? I said, you're kidding me, right? Because the Hyundais, when they first came out that I knew, were the cheapest car in town.
Yeah, and they were junky.
Right. And he shows me this car, and we look at it, and I said, wow, that is a beauty. And he says, a couple of my friends have it, and they just love it. I'm thinking about getting that.
Everybody who's driving these Korean cars, they're all jacked up about them. They're just supposed to be they have a great warranty, like, you know, a full everything goes like 100,000 miles, something outrageously nice. And they look cool, and everybody says they're just a nice car. So what are you going to do?
And when a teenager likes it, that's pretty amazing.
You know, years and years ago, when I first went to Korea, I noticed that there was an awfully lot of nice cars in Korea that were all made by these Korean companies. I think there's two or three, or maybe there's a couple that don't get over here. But they had a variety of cars, and I know they were just shipping kind of the junky ones over here, the little compacts. And I think that at the time, I was always thinking, why are they sending these cars? Because they got so many cool cars in Korea. And now I think they finally decided that, you know, this market is worth it. You know, I think they were just testing the U.S. market, and I think they got some blowout product that they can bring over here. Yeah. I think there's a lot of my concern is a lot of the cars are underpowered, but they do have some cars with a little more oomph.
Yeah. So I was looking at some of the retail sales numbers recently, and this very strange divergence. You have companies like Tiffany, Coach, Fossil, Lululemon, you know, the higher end, higher cost items.
Yeah, we've talked about this before.
And they're still kicking butt. Lower end is stumbling, the Targets, the Walmarts, the Sears, you know, they're not doing so well. So I think that is once again testament to the differential between the domestic U.S. economy and the spending habits and the rest of the world. And the fact that our dollar is so devalued that it makes it so much cheaper to buy it. So
yeah,
that's
continuing. Yeah,
there is that. Yep. I have some good news.
Yeah?
Or I have news. Let me just say this. This is from the area of science that I found, and I just thought we'd talk about this, that Hong Kong scientists say that they finally ended their debate about the possibility of time travel. And even if they say you get your hands on a souped-up DeLorean and flux capacitor, you can't travel back in time. They have concluded it. They're not going to study it any longer.
No, good.
So I think that, you know,
I wasn't actually worried about this personally. No. I didn't have any real thoughts about going back in time or ahead in time. Although it'd be going back in time would be cool.
What would you do? Would you do the old, I'd buy Google? I'd buy.
Yeah,
would you do,
absolutely. That's exactly what I'd do.
Find who wins the horse races.
Exactly.
It's all about money. It's not about changing any of the bad things you've done in your life.
No. You got the opportunity to kick butt with some investments. So that's what I'd do. But I think that's what most people would do.
Right. Most people are not going to go back to maybe, you know, grade school and say, you know, I was really mean to that person and probably they turn out to be, a good person. I want to go back, apologize, and make sure that never happened.
Yeah.
No.
It's a waste of time. Yeah. So this kind of thing, who knows? I mean, it's possible. I mean, they think science has never been able to really slam the door on anything because there's always some new theory, and they still haven't found the boson, Higgs boson, whatever it is they're looking for at CERN in Switzerland, and who knows? I mean, it just sounds like a phony baloney story that just came out just to get some attention to some scientists.
Yeah, well, they're ending that debate. I don't know what they're taking on next, but they got to do something, I guess. We'll see. Now, the European – back to science, the European Space Agency, you're going to have to clarify this to me because I am absolutely 100% – I don't understand this at all. But they say that they want to take on a major task and be a major part of NASA's future space exploration plans. Now, didn't we just kind of cancel our space exploration plans?
Yeah, and we fired half the NASA workers. I think they're all out looking for work.
We just had the last shuttle launch.
Right.
We just kind of said, you know what, we're not doing – and now all of a sudden Europe wants to do something with us on this. I mean, what is that?
Maybe we stopped everything so Europe can catch up. I have no idea. Ah, this whole thing seems bogus. And, yeah. You know, we all, of course, we're letting a private industry now take us into space. And there's a big race amongst a bunch of, you know, all these guys are in New Mexico around Alamogordo, I think is where the center of all this activity is. There's a bunch of these little companies. And now they're all racing to see which private company can send a man to the moon.
Well, and you got also like the very expensive Joyride by Richard Branson and Virgin.
Yeah.
That's going to be, a couple of years from now, they're going to send some people up there.
Yeah,
to,
this is going to go on until one of them blows up.
Oh, yeah, then they'll stop it.
And some rich guy, some multi-billionaire that's important to his companies, the hundreds of companies that he owns, will get killed. And there's going to be a big scandal, and they're going to sue them for, you know, wrongful death. And I just see this not working out.
So do you think, and this is maybe a bit absurd, but do you think that when the people go on the spaceships or the space-enabled planes or whatever you want to call these things to do the Richard Branson thing and all that, when they go to get on, do you think they have to take off their shoes actually to go through security there? Maybe, huh? So, maybe not.
So this happened again?
It happens every time. And every single time I go up to the TSA people and I say, listen, can you put down some kind of deodorizing mats? Can you put up some Lysol? Can you do something here? This is disgusting. They're like, we know. There's nothing we could do about it. Mind you, I have to put my keys in a dog bowl.
Dog bowl.
What is it? It's a dog bowl, right?
It's a dog bowl. You mention it.
It's a dog bowl. I got to put my keys in my wallet in a dog bowl and send it on through. And, this is the first time I actually went through one of those full body scans.
Oh, I wouldn't even go through it. You're taking your life into your own – this is not a good idea. You get x-rayed.
I went through the whole thing and then they stopped me. I had to stand on these two footprints. They said, please stand right here. I stood there and – they had to wait, I guess, somebody in another office. Now, I looked. I said, where is this person? You know, there's a person locked away somewhere looking at these scans, probably laughing their heads off.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then they gave the approval for me to go through. So, yeah, that was a rather ugly situation.
You should just opt out.
Yeah, we'll do the pat down, right?
Yeah, what difference does it make? I went through that thing the first time when they first came in, not knowing what they were. I thought it was a puffer machine. This was years when they first showed up. And I walked through, and the guy pat me down anyway.
Yeah, they said the puffer machines are gone, by the way.
Oh, yeah, the puffer machines are all gone. It was a complete waste of money, and it turns out that these things don't do anything either, according to congressional testimony, which we have documented on the No Agenda show. One of the congressmen just pointed out there was apparently a secret report they don't want to talk about, and he couldn't give details because it was confidential, but he says the machines don't work.
Which ones, the puffer machines?
No, the x-ray machines. They don't work either. It's a complete waste of the taxpayer. They don't work. They don't do what they're supposed to do.
Maybe we should just all lay down and go through the belt, the conveyor belt.
Well, maybe.
You know, we talked about a few weeks ago about this whole issue about the post office, this big scandal. They really are profitable, some people think. But yet at the same time, the money that they make is being stolen to fund other governmental expenses, right? We talked about that?
Yeah.
Well, now I guess the post office is closing, or they're considering closing, 3,600 post offices.
That's a lot.
That's tremendous. So I don't know what that means exactly, but you know, it seems like it's first of all, a lot of labor will be cut, obviously, and you know, how many people work in a post office? At least, can we say at least two?
Yeah, more like four.
Okay, yeah, four that do the job of two. Or four to do a job of eight, depending on how you want to look at it. And so now it's going to be a lot of rural areas that are going to be closed. And I suppose, I don't know. I don't know what that's going to mean to people that utilize the post office. Do you use the post office? Do you go there a lot?
Yeah, I have a post office box. It's where I pick stuff up and I buy and I send stuff in the mail. And, you know, it's handy. It's inexpensive. It works. It's reliable. Yeah.
You don't go there to buy like stamps, do you? Do like the collector stamps?
I have done that.
Yeah.
I used to be a stamp collector when I was a kid.
All right. You still have the books?
Yep.
Somewhere in that closet that's full.
I know where they are, and the kids will end up with them, and they're going to roll their eyes and probably sell them on eBay for not enough money.
Right, right. And finally, on the area of technology, it seems that the multi-touch technology, you know, the tablets, et cetera, is gaining some ground with researchers in the medical area for therapeutic powers. So you have games and software that's played on the multi-touch screens have been found to help children with autism and other illnesses. So I guess what that means, the end of that is that there's going to be a whole heck of a lot of dolphins and horses out of work.
Yeah, that was a punchline to your joke.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really a joke, but it's a fact. I mean, so now all of a sudden I'm not sure what they're doing with these touch screens, but I guess it's the equivalent of what is that called? Where you have there's a stimulus where they attach the electrodes to your head and then you move around. What's that called? You know, and you can
electroshock therapy, the way you're describing it.
No, it's biofeedback. Right? Where you can touch something and you can get instant response to it. So I guess they're utilizing their touch sense with that. Yeah. So, and by the way, I upgraded my Mac to the new Lion.
Oh, what do you think?
Well, the first thing is that the way the trackpad works now.
Yeah, it was a big controversy.
It's upside down. I'm trying to get used to it because that's what the iPad uses or the tablets.
Well, it's also the way that Google Maps work.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get used to it, but I got to tell you something. I end up at the wrong side of the document all the time.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. I think, I think it wouldn't be that hard to get used to. I haven't gone to that yet, but
I haven't seen the Lion. You know, one of the things that I like is when you see an OS that comes out that helps on things like file management that may have been increased, maybe storage issues, they kind of shrink things, or maybe that you have a speed benefit from it, efficiency, that it's using the processor better. I mean, all that. You know, this seems like more like a few bells and whistles, a cleanup, some extra little things that I don't know if I'm going to use. There's more gestures available on the touchpad, which, big deal. The only thing that bugs me, and I don't know why Apple did this, but they did this a while ago with iTunes. On the left-hand side of iTunes are all the different things like movies and podcasts and music and all that. And it used to be nice colored icons. Now it's all gray. Everything's gray.
Yeah.
So now in the Finder, everything's gray. And I just think I don't know what the point of that is.
I don't know.
Maybe it's feng shui or something, but I like the colors.
All right, well, let's take a look at our stocks.
Okay, nothing's been stopped out.
Nothing's been stopped out, but I have to say something that's very distressing.
Okay.
The only red ones on the entire spreadsheet are mine.
Really?
You don't have one loser on the spreadsheet as of today.
Hmm.
I mean, you've had other ones, but the current spreadsheet, all the losers are my stocks. FedEx is a loser. Chesapeake Utilities shouldn't be, but it's a loser. Novo Nordisk shouldn't be a loser. It is. Intel is still down, even though they
had... Well, no. Don't look at it that way, because Intel and ARM were a paired trade, so it's up.
Yeah, I know, I expected the two of them to be in a horse race, mm-hmm. not one of them going backwards.
Right.
I have to say, yeah, ARM Holdings is actually up 5%. Cisco is a loser, even though it should, that's probably wasn't a good one. So I have another. I know. See, you've got some new ones. I have one that I know you're going to.
I put Duncan in there for you, just in case.
I would put it in as a short.
Whatever you want. I thought.
No,
that
I'm not going to play Duncan. I have one I want to play. Okay. I know this is going to be. You're going to go, oh, brother. Goes another. This is not going to work. It can't possibly work. But I think the time has come.
Is it something that you've done before?
Yep.
Don't tell me it's an energy company, please, God.
No. Oh, okay, no, not ahead. That thing. That was ludicrous.
Give me the symbol.
Netflix.
You're going long or short?
Short.
Oh, really, huh? Well, let me tell you something about Netflix. The numbers came out yesterday. Stock was down, 12% or something of that nature, right? In after hours, and then it only ended up down 5%, and everything about the earnings report was not encouraging at all. And, the problem with Netflix is they have good management. Well, it's not a problem, but Netflix has a good management, They have good opportunity. They are on the forefront of what they do. And the problem is that even with a bad report, if this report came out for another company that wasn't as well known, it would have sunk 20%.
Yeah.
And stayed down. This thing is only down 5% after numbers, even in a bad tape today. So
I'm going
understand.
For it.
All right, I hear you. I can't say that it's a bad move. I can't. I just the only reason why it's a bad move is because
it's never it been seems, a good. No, the reason is because it's never been a good move.
Right.
So why should it be a good move now? I understand the rationale, and I know it's risky, but the fact that they changed their model, their business model, just enough, I think that's the straw that's going to break the camel's back.
And you're talking about the increase in the fees, right?
Yeah. And I think I think Apple's going to come on with something that's going to help the problem continue. RIM has the same good management, smart guys, the whole thing all those years, but they, you know, they got destroyed. I think the same and Netflix is overpriced, it's ridiculous. And I think this is the time, at least on this where there's no risk involved. I'm not really putting any money up, obviously. But I think in terms of my own personal pride, I'm going for it again. I know I lost out the last time. I'm going to try it again.
I'm not going to disagree with you, you know, at all with this because I think that there's some very good reason why Netflix should come off. And a lot of that has to do, I agree, with its competition, change of business model, and the fact that, you know, that their earnings did not come in this time. But, you know, the problem you'll have with Netflix is that they are smart cookies when it comes to the price of their stock. And they, just like Apple, will send out little bitty announcements of things over time. You know, there's a streaming deal with Warner.
I understand the trick.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting – I'm not trying to talk you out of it. But
no, you're not going to talk me out. I'm going for it. I'm swinging for the fences after these losses I'm showing up with.
Yep. I see it. I think it's a good idea. Now, I'm saying that – let's go down the list. Anything that sticks out here? No, GE is kind of doing its thing. And I mean, some stuff has been sitting there for a while now. I think that JCPenney is looking pretty good. The one that I'm going to suggest, it's an earnings play, and it's a company called Shutterfly. You're probably familiar with
them.
And do you use Shutterfly?
No.
I use Shutterfly. I think Shutterfly is a great little thing. A lot of people that I know use Shutterfly.
It's kind of like a high-priced stock.
It is. It has come out with earnings the last several times and really blew past numbers. It is definitely priced a little bit high right now. It is an earnings play. Chart is looking good for a breakout potential, again, if earnings come in reasonable. And, you know, with all of the things that are going on, there's probably two sides I can tell you. Number one, with all the cameras, the ability to upload very easily, all that, you can say, well, that's good. People get the printed pictures. It's very easy. On the other hand, you have things like the Apple TV. You have the things like, you know, the iPad and all that people may say, well, what am I printing pictures for? I have the ability to just see them wherever I want to. So you can kind of go both sides on the theory behind this. You know, it's kind of like old school getting pictures printed, right?
Yeah. I'd be leery of this one, but okay.
And Duncan, we don't own this, by the way. This is just an idea that we've kind of been bantering around here. I may actually pick this up, but
Duncan?
We'll see what happens. Well, no, I'm talking about Shutterfly. Duncan, I think we should probably do the same thing we did last, which was
buy then sell.
Yep. But we'll see.
I'm game for that. I think it'd be kind of interesting. I mean, it's possible, but I can't imagine why anyone would buy.
Well, it's just the way it is. It doesn't matter rationally.
If that's a fact, but if Duncan shows that same trend, which is to shoot up for a day or two and then turn around and sink, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's a donut company.
I think that what did we do with was it LinkedIn? What did we do? We bought it 10 minutes or so after the open.
No, it wasn't LinkedIn. It was the other one. It was Pandora, wasn't it?
Oh, Pandora, yeah. We bought it after the move up, and then as soon as it turned over, as soon as it reached a high and stopped moving up,
right.
That's when we shorted it. So when it reached a high and then started ticking down, that's when we shorted it. So we'll do the same thing here. So we're gonna buy it 10 minutes after it opens and then track it, and if it turns after that, we will short of that point.
Yeah,
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So I'll write that in there somehow, and I'll put this in here somehow. Now, by the way, any of the stocks that we recommend here or not recommend but that we talk about are not recommendations to buy or sell anything. It's very risky. You know, we do this professionally. with our clients over at Horowitz Company, and we may own stocks that we mentioned that are all, those are all listed on the Google spreadsheet. And again, this is not a recommendation. Do your own research on all of these. But one of the things I want you to do is if you want to take a look at these, just go over to DH Unplugged. At the end of every show on the notes page, there is a link to this spreadsheet, which actually updates live. So we'll have all the different stocks on here and a variety of different information about gains and loss, the reasons for it, when we're stopping out, things of that nature. And then next week, if you want, we could talk about my new Apple TV.
So what are you so jacked up about this Apple TV for?
It's not jacked up. I think it's a very cool little product. I'll tell you why. So I went on this trip recently, and I had all these pictures, and a lot of them are on my iPad. I push a button, and it just streams it right to the TV in high def. Wow. Now, usually what you'd have to do is you'd have to plug in like a cable to the VGA in to a TV. Colors were always washed out. Well, what I do now is I can just put a video up, and the colors are perfect. Yeah. It streams right off of the iTunes library. I use my iPhone as a remote, or I just push a button and have it stream directly from my iPad, whether it's a picture, whether it's YouTube, whether it's a video on my my computer.
So if people come over to your house, do you make them watch this like the old man in the slideshow, you know, from the 50s, 60s? You know, they come on over and you can see us. So we're going to show you a slideshow of our trip to Jamaica.
They tell me they want to see it. I'm there. No, yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, when my son just came home from his 4-week sailing adventure, we just put the chip in there and moved the pictures over and just watched everything on the TV in the living room. It was great. It's really easy.
You got some big 55-inch or what you got in there?
Yeah, I got a 50. I think it's a 52 LED. Beautiful. I mean, the pictures 52s. Come out. Maybe it's a 48 LED. It's something like that. It's right around there.
50, 48. I think it's 48. 40. No, it's 42, 50, 55.
So I guess
60.
I have the 50. I must have the 50 LED from Samsung, and the picture is absolutely gorgeous. And I have this new little Sony camera that takes video in 1080, and it fills the entire screen perfectly.
Yeah, that's because it's 1080.
Right. Well, I'm just saying you could, and I don't have to do anything but just play it and push a button and say, show this on my Apple TV, and it just pops up on through the HDMI right into the system.
Hmm.
It's great. $99.
These things work. $99.
It doesn't have a hard drive. You have to buy things if you want to stream. But the streaming is fast. The streaming is in high def off of iTunes through the system. You have YouTube on there. You have you play music on, through there. You can do whatever you want. Very easy. I think it's a cool addition to the multimedia outfit.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
All right. We're done.
We're done. We're finished.
So we'll be back next Tuesday, hopefully, if all goes well. Mm-hmm. And watching Netflix cave collapse.
Yep.
Crater.
Well, right. Crater. And Crocs hopefully step it up, so to speak.
Yeah. We'll find out shortly. Until then, we'll maybe talk in the meantime.
Okay, see you soon.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.